What are the scientific challenges in moving from targeted to non-targeted methods for food fraud testing, and how can they be addressed?
I think that's a good progression from the first question, because one of the, I don't know about the challenges, certainly one of the opportunities is in terms of using more non-targeted approaches, that you have potentially a much wider coverage of what you can detect. So that's one of the opportunities, and lots of people are looking at it, and you see a lot of the sort of, even the infrared technology, which they're thinking of putting in situ in a factory. So then it is part of the risk mitigation. So there are lots of opportunities, but lots of challenges, because we don't have the quality assurance infrastructure in terms of non-target analysis that we do in our traditional techniques.
But the advantage regarding your question is also the advantage of novel technologies to go back into the history. Retrospective data mining is the other advantage of some novel mass spectrometric technologies, for example. So even after a longer time, you can go back if there is some problem. So this is a big advantage.
Maybe mass spectrometry could be the right example, also because when you move from targeted to non-targeted, it doesn't necessarily mean that also you move from, let's say, from rapid to confirmatory, or from cheap to expensive. It depends. Mm-hmm. It means that when we were talking how much testing, maybe we need more testing in terms of screening approaches as much as possible in the early stage, as we said, but screening in a wide way means making something that could be relatively expensive in some ways, but effective as well.
Comprehensive.
And MS spectrometry or next generation sequencing from the genotype or DNA point of view are sort of techniques that surely are not, let's say, considered cheap, but when you think about the possibility to have a big coverage in many samples as well in a relatively short time, then the concept of how many testing in a screening phase could be something completely different from, let's say, a cheap lateral flow device that you use for a normal control or a food safety issue.
Actually, the target method, for example, you can identify the melamine in the milk, and for example, in the target method, in the photochemical cortex, then for each 40 degree, should say what is normal, should be like it is. And the non-target, most important thing is to identification. What difference was this normal target? And sometimes if they are different with the target, things must be have something wrong. We need to from the non-target to identify what added, what adulteration.
Yes, I think you're right, absolutely. Yeah. The whole advantage of the untargeted testing is picking up an anomaly.
Yeah.
Even if you don't know what that anomaly is, you can say, well, I'm going to look at this a little bit more carefully. So it's really quite useful, that,
I mean, we had a presentation earlier on today to say there was over 1,000 publications last year on non-targeted methods. There is no continuity, there's no agreement about how you validate those, there's no reference samples. So I think there's a huge amount of effort being wasted because we don't have the guidelines, and I think, I mean, it's something that the Commission should really take seriously, because I think what revolutionised targeted mething was we got the EU directive to say this is how we validate a method. A lot of people didn't like it, but everybody works to the same standard now. We have no standard for non-targeted methods.
Not at all.
So you come to a court case,
I don't know,
I would never defend a non-targeted method in a court case. I just don't
Too
see
difficult.
How you could do it.
And actually, not only measurement but also data handling. This is another point, because you have to decide which signal you still consider, which is negligible, and so on. There is different sensitivity among the instruments, etc., etc. It's really, on one side, big potential in this method. On the other hand, I think that communication of standards is not for tomorrow or next month.
There is also the need to increase a lot the, let's say, the knowledge and the skills also within the different stakeholders, because maybe some research centers, some specific, let's say, universities or groups can provide 1,000 publications, even if without the standardization or validation approach as well. But if you look to the small, medium enterprises, or also large ones in some way, there's still a lack of, let's say, adequate skills to handling the data, as I said, and to handle the tsunami of data, as often some speakers indicate. And so it stretches the juice of information, and then also in the validated way. So I think that there's a problem of, let's say, community, common language, also to have the right possibility to overcome the challenge of moving from the target to the non-targeted one.
And there is another point. I would say if you have a routine method, even if it's a multi-residue method, but it is still running according to some routine, on a routine basis. But on the other hand, if you have adulteration, you need a high degree of competence, scientific competence to interpret
it. That's the point.
Because it's always different, and this is definitely not for technician. So in other words, there are growing demands for competence of the staff handling that. And this is...
Well, we certainly have, you know, big challenges in terms of developing quality assurance protocols that people can go to court with and have confidence in. I don't think we should underestimate that the move to non-targeted analysis puts us in a much more proactive space, because we say we can identify an anomaly, we can identify change.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then, depending on the type of technique, if we're using an information-rich technique like mass spectrometry, we can then identify what the change is due to. Mm-hmm. And then you can develop a targeted analysis that you can take to court. So I don't think we should underplay the big change and the big opportunity we've got.
The target is more easy to validation, but the non-target is difficult.
I think we were lacking the performance criteria at the moment. It has also been identified one of the major gaps that we have currently in this kind of research. And basically what you're saying, you know, with these methods we can establish whether a sample is authentic or not. But, you know, it's still the way around of detecting specific adulterations.
And Saskia, I have another consideration. If you have normal method, for example, residue analysis, again, as an example, you have some uncertainty, which is for residues 50%. Officially, that's agreed uncertainty for low target levels. And now, what is acceptable? Because we have some false positive, false negative, and what is still acceptable model to declare for court it's authentic or not, because like any measurement has some uncertainty, even the concept. So. This is also another question, how to define that.
My background is food safety, but before that was anti-counterfeiting and other areas in packaging. I have a little bit of deja vu, because when RFID came out, there was all this investment and all this promise and idea what would happen. And then anti-counterfeiting for pharmaceutical industry was about 10 years ago, that same kind of burst. And I feel like this burst of, you know, like you said, 1,000, you know, articles, and things are, there's so much more. Food fraud 5 years ago wasn't in... couldn't get it in a journal, and now they're seeking it. And so I feel like food fraud is a teenager that's, you know, getting ready to go to college, and there's a transition there of maturing, there's a necessary, you know, a growth, and then but there's also several stages as it matures as well of how do we use non-targeted for prevention as well as to then use targeted tests. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like that we have this necessary kind of overload without any structure, because we don't know where it is, and it just feels natural from especially looking at those other innovations in the past.
And keeping your paradigm, John, about let's say not microbes but smart adults for criminals that are not teenagers for sure, maybe we need still to move to the targeted, as Paul said, when we are sure that something can be, let's say, considered for authenticity marker, or because this is something that we want to focus. But at the same time, we need still to enlarge the non-targeted one, because there will be something new that will arise again. So we need, yes, to move, but in some ways we need to keep both the approaches.
Yeah.
And the other thing, of course, is that if you develop a really good targeted method and you stop fraud overnight, shortly it becomes redundant, and you have to tell your financial director why you've spent all this investment in a method that no one wants anymore because they've gone on to something else.
Yep.
So non-targeted methods have a much more longer lifespan because they're just measuring change effectively.
If I follow on from John's excellent analogy about the school kids, if you think about food safety, chemical food safety, it's a very, very mature subject. There are no innovations. We can measure molecules. There's very little happening there. Mm-hmm. All the innovation now is around food fraud detection, and we will probably go through a period, I think, of about 10 years of the innovations until the platforms that are actually fit for purpose start to emerge, those things that industry can start to use to control their supply chains. I think that's just where we are now.
I think there's new challenges as well, because I know when we had counterfeit alcohol, we were finding methanol, acetone, butanol, and we said to them, if you can tell us whether the water has fluoride or not in this alcohol, we'll know the areas in Ireland where that has come from. And that's very limited. It will give us a really good target, but I know we can't do that. I said, we can't do it now or it can't be done. And I said, it can't be done at the moment anyway. We don't know that sometime in the future you might be able to do it, but it can't be done, you know. So the nature of what we're asking for, I think, to support an investigation is completely different and requires different thinking. And because it's not about finding the chemical, it's about finding fluoride or not in that alcohol, you know.
Well, I think you make a great point, because when you know exactly the question you have of exactly that nuance in the type of fluoride or amount of fluoride in that water, because you have a real real need for it to solve a real problem, then there's a lot of energy and momentum and resources to answer that specific question. And a lot of times the start's kind of feeling out new things. But again, when you have a real specific question and there's real public health threats, then I think that's a bit of the maturity of the whole system that it naturally grows out.
Now, I'd say the amount of money it would cost to do that test and the amount of times it would be used after that, as you say, Paul, is probably it just wouldn't pay, I'd say, anyone to do it at the moment. But it would have been very useful for us in that investigation.